The following is presented by the Cheeky Bastards.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers, and welcome to the 11th edition of Dropping a Bruce, the monthly podcast where we watch every single one of Bruce Willis's 40 direct-to-video releases from his acting career to see if he took the role for a paycheck and dropped a deuce, or if, in fact, he took the role and gave it his all and dropped a Bruce. I am the Notorious Scott K.
And from the UK, this is Mr. Smith.
And together, we will be your hapless, slapdick stewards on this 40-month journey through the lesser-known movies of Mr. Bruce Willis's filmography. This month's stop finds us one episode away from the end of our first season as we review 2017's American action thriller, First Kill. Hoorah, Master Chief, First Kill. We got us a First Kill coming up. We have been on a high as of late. We had had three very different but yet very enjoyable watches. It started with Precious Cargo, which slapped us out of a lull, a death spiral, some might say, as it felt like this podcast was on a nosedive straight to Schittsville for the next 30-plus episodes. However, neither of us are saying that Precious Cargo will be on anyone's top anything list of any year. However, it was a very enjoyable watch if you've been taking our journey. We were then surprised by Mr. No Baloney, Christopher Maloney in Marauders. Oh. And then, of course, last month, we were given a Christmas treat when we had Once Upon a Time in motherfucking Venice. A first time on the show this year or this season and in this journey that Mr. Willis actually was the star of one of these films. However, he is not the star of this film, but I feel like coming into this film was going to have a tough time keeping up with the level of expectations that we have had the last 3 months. However, before we can give anything away at the end, I do not feel it drops to the level of movies prior to that three-month journey by any stretch of imagination. It's a weird film.
I would say it's competent.
Yes, I don't hate it, but I didn't love it. But I didn't not love it more than I did not hate it. Does that make sense?
It's a perfect, it's a perfect Sunday afternoon movie.
Yes.
You know, when you're just kind of, you've had lunch and you're just lazing around.
Yeah.
It's that kind of movie. It's like,
it's one of those ones, if you're on this journey, you go, you know what? I'm going to check this one out. And you go, I didn't mind checking that one out.
No.
You know,
no,
like you're not going to go away going, holy shit. But you're also going to go away, what the fuck was that? It's just kind of, and I feel bad for it. I'm not sure if it's because of had we seen First Kill prior to Precious Cargo, we may be more excited about First Kill because of the journey we've been on. But since we've seen the other three movies that got us out of that doldrum, I just feel like it was just, it was like, hey, I didn't feel like I'd wasted any time last night when I watched it. And I felt like, hey, all right. And there are some bright spots. There are some things I was like, oh, we should talk more about this person because I don't think they get enough credit. But, when we get to our end, I had to go, like, what's my favorite list? I'm thinking, Jesus, I really don't
I had
know.
Some tough,
yes, you did. I had to, start going.
Yeah, I had some tough decisions to make when I was taking my notes.
Yeah, at the end, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do for this one.
You know, sometimes, just a bit behind the scenes there, oftentimes, I kind of write a sort of shorthanded synopsis of what happens throughout the film. But with this one, it was so kind of middle of the road. I just felt I am not going to need to remember that, I'll be able to remember all this stuff.
It's a very simple.
A lot of the other movies, they're overly convoluted and quite overly complicated. So I'm like, I think I'm going to need to write this down because Scott's going to mention one scene and I'm going to be like, is that in this movie? Whereas with this one, it was quite sort of, it just was paint by numbers, but that's not always.
Is that android woman suddenly now bad? It's because she put on some eyeliner? What's going on here? Oh,
exactly,
my goodness.
Thomas Jane's got a painted fingernail. Why?
Exactly. Why? What?
Hey, no, I'm not going to diss
did they just pull a 360 slow-mo boat slide and one shot got fired?
It was kind of like, I think I'll be able to get through this one without writing too much down.
Well, before we take our bitch-ass son, Honey, for the first time and try to make his little punk-ass a man, it's time for our...
What you talking about, Willis?
Just the facts, man.
just the facts.
This film was released in 2017, written by Nick Gordon and directed by Stephen C. Miller, starring Bruce Willis, Hayden Christensen, Gethin Anthony, Ty Shelton, Megan Leonard, Tyler John Olson, Shea Buckner, William DeMeo, and Maggie Avila, with a running time of 97 minutes, made on a budget of $10 million and grossing $347,000 at the box office. It holds a 5 rating on IMDb with a 15 critics and 26 audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. A Wall Street banker is forced to evade a police chief who is investigating a robbery as he attempts to recover the stolen money in exchange for his son's life. Lionsgate and Grindhouse Entertainment presents First Kill.
Hey, Billy. What brings you home?
Gonna show Danny where I'm from.
Have yourself a nice visit, but keep your eyes open. We had a little trouble at the bank. Exercise caution.
Hey, kiddo. Early bird catches the buck.
Come on, Dad. We've been here all morning. We haven't seen a thing. Dad, look. Look, he's alive!
Daniel, come on!
Oh, my God, what happened?
Laura, you gotta do something. He's lost a ton of blood. Let go of my son right now.
I can't do that. I need that money.
Dad!
Eddie!
You know, tell me what's going on here.
My son is in that car.
I'll find your son. And Levi Barrett is his name.
Levi told me to get the money for him.
Something doesn't feel right.
I can get Danny back, but it means not a word to the cops. I think he's working with Levi.
I think he's lying.
Drop that bag.
You have something Levi wants?
He insisted I not tell the cops. What was I supposed to do?
Tell the cops!
That money is the only way to get Danny back.
You ready to get your son?
Let's go.
There is no hunting like hunting a man.
Bruce Willis plays local Granville Police Chief Marvin Howell, who is desperate to recover the $2 million recently stolen from the local bank, but we're unsure of his true motives for this. I will give this film credit in a second. We're going to jump into it, but it definitely kept us on our toes not knowing which way Bruce was going. I'll be honest with that. Like, for it took for a while to really go, huh. You may, because you watch it twice, you may have caught on quicker. The second time around, go, oh, okay, that's where I see these things are happening. But it took a while to know. I wasn't sure for a little bit if Bruce was good, bad, what was going on with Mr. Willie Will.
Well, early on in the film, when he pulls over Hayden Christensen,
yes.
Yeah. I think they kind of allude, but very, obviously, very subtly allude to that he's,
he may not be playing,
you know,
by the
shady.
Book.
Maybe shady. Maybe shady, though. Not necessarily, because he's all business, this guy.
Yes, it's ambiguous, his motives. Mm. But we should also, before we jump in, talk about, as we said last year, back in 2023 on our last episode, this is in 2017. This, once again, is a film that went direct to DVD and did not have, Mr. Willis did not have a theatrical release in 2017. We are at the point in his career where Mr. Willis has only 5 more theatrical releases left, 2 of which are just cameos. We're going to head into, starting next month, 2018. His last film will come out in 2019. So I think you know where we're about to hit. We're about to hit the slope of 26 in a row soon. By the early in season 2, we will start the 26 in a row slide where I will not have to let you know what theatrical movies came out, because none have come out in any year after 2019.
No, but First Kill.
Yes.
Just a little tidbit. It was, you know, was released theatrically in some foreign territories.
Yes.
made $350,000 at the box office. The budget was $10 million.
Yes. Well, it's because, as we've said, the one thing we have uncovered, we've uncovered something we did not know we were going to uncover on this journey, and we have uncovered, and I'm going to get into him in a second, the people who run EFO Film Production Company, Emmett Furlough Oasis, pretty sure that they are involved in either sex trafficking and or drug smuggling as well, and that these films are washing drug money and sex trafficking money. There's no doubt they are always made for about $10 million, and they always make back nothing. And yet they still have pumped them out left and fucking right. So I'm just saying, maybe this guy's name will come out on the Epstein documents, and we can add it to our...
another little thing, though. I think this might be a record. I didn't quite do my research here, but this movie had four producers. So that might be some kind of record.
That's incorrect. I went back and checked on IMDb.
We may be different sources then.
Maybe. This film had 31 producers, which is just five shy of how many actors it also had in its film. At least through IMDb, it had producers. It had the number 31. 31. And how many actors did this film have?
That's insane.
36 actors. So there were almost as many producers as people acting in the fucking film.
Well, I do apologize. I got my
your
my
movies
information.
Wrong?
No, my information was obviously from the wrong website. But,
it's all right.
So no. What I was going to say, though, was if that only had four producers, you know, that's probably, what's his name? The guy's name?
Well, you know what? Thank you for teeing me up for it. This is the ninth film of the 11 in our journey so far that Randall Emmett, under Emmett Furlough Oasis Films Production Company. Emmett is a sleazy wannabe Weinstein who, according to a 2022 LA Times article, has been accused of offering women roles in exchange for sex. He is also the subject of a 2023 documentary where allegations of racial discrimination and employee abuse have been leveled. Apparently, he was also a part of Mark Wahlberg's crew back in the day and is the inspiration for the character Turtle from the HBO series Entourage, which now having this information makes me not like Turtle in the show, makes him think of a bigger sleazeball, or maybe he was the better version of him. So yes, Mr. Randall Emmett, I'm sure within the next year or two, he's going to be arrested and turned into a party favor at one of the local California penal institutions.
Well, in order to clear my name, I would like to point my finger here at Letterboxd for wrongfully suggesting that there were four producers of this movie.
Pieces of shit
over
there.
When in fact there was 31. Yeah. Letterboxd,
sort it out. As my buddy said, sort yourself out, son.
Sort your fucking life out, mate. Listen. it's listed as having four producers on Letterboxd. They've only got it slightly wrong. Jesus
Maybe
Christ.
You know, he's just counting. He's like, there's one, there's two, there's three, four is good enough. No, who's gonna cross reference?
No, do you know what? I think someone said there's 31 producers. No, they must meant 3 plus 1.
Yes, you mean four.
No film this shit is
as many producers as it does actors. It's insane.
Exactly. So in order to clear my name, fuck you, Letterboxd. I love you, though. I do love Letterboxd, though.
Now, this was the third film Mr. Willis has done with Stephen C. Miller. This man's got a mixed bag. He did Extraction, which is currently the lowest ranked film we've done so far. Yeah. And he also did Marauders, which was a surprisingly big hit for us. It's in our top five.
Yeah, that's our heavy hitter, one of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Mr. fucking Maloney, no baloney. I'll hit you with my Stromboloney. So we got him
your mother's an animal, and
I hit her every Wednesday. So he did Extraction and Marauders, and then this. So this would be like falling between them. You know, like, he books in him with like a really shit film, and then a really good film, and then this film just kind of falls in the middle. Now, maybe one of the reasons it's not as standout in a good or bad way for us is because it was filmed in exactly 14 days. 14 days.
Now I can believe.
I mean, imagine the day after Christmas, you start a film, and then on this Tuesday when our episode comes out, even though this will come out 2 weeks after, when our Cheeky Bastards comes out, you're done with your film. As you say, economical filming. Clearly, this is the textbook definition of economic filmmaking.
I will say, I'll give him credit for doing it in 14 days.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen some other films. Some films take 6 months and you go, this is a pile of dog shit. It took you 6 months to make this big train wreck.
And they cost six times as much.
Very, very true. Now, as we're about to jump into our amazing, amazing stuff, let me get you the plot. Let me see if I can sort you out, son. When the son of a wealthy Wall Street banker is bullied for the fourth time in a year at school, his dad figures the best way to make his son a man is to take him deer hunting back in his rural hometown, where unbeknownst to them, there was just a bank robbery. As expected, the day they go hunting, they witness a double cross and get themselves ensnared in the fallout mess from the robbery. Who's in on the heist? Who can be trusted? And who the fuck color graded this film will leave you guessing until the climactic end. Folks, I give you the discussion on First Kill, the first film of 2024.
Dun, dun, dun.
And my first note was, opens with another cool title sequence. Does this mean we're in for a shitty movie? That was my question mark. It's like, uh-oh. I was like, I kind of like the titles. This means that they spent all this budget on drugs and whores and a couple of titles.
Oh.
Now, basically, the whole premise of this film is because some kid didn't just jam one of his action figures up a bully's ass. We got to go on some kind of spree. We go back to our hometown. We're going to deer hunt. A lot of times in these movies, I'm starting to learn, they just don't even care about grounding any part of their films in any slight of reality. I don't know how things are in the UK, but in America, there are hunting seasons. There are seasons you go hunting. You also have to have a hunting license. You don't just go and say, hey, my son, he's a pussy. He gets beat up at school. I'm going to go shoot a deer in somebody's land. That doesn't work that way. Right? You have to have a hunting license. We have hunting season. There's deer season. There's all these seasons. I don't know what time of year this is. I think it's spring. It could be summer. We don't really know. I do know that as I'll get on this film, light rises very, very quickly in this town of Granville. When they wake up to hunt on that first day, it's not even sunlight. By the time they start to walk out of the field, it is fucking mid-afternoon. It is so bright in the sky. He's like, the early bird gets worm. You have missed the fucking worm, sir. The worm is now a butterfly. This is how late you are in the day. And then they pretend it's fucking the morning. It is so bright. I didn't even try. Like, it happens again later on when he's driving around with Bruce. And all of a sudden it's like, it's nighttime. And the next thing you know, it's supposed to be morning. But you can tell it is bright afternoon sun. They don't even care. They don't even fucking try. But anyways, that's why we have the plot. Plot of we head home to Granville, Ohio from New York City. We make our way to our old stomping grounds. We get our old dad's hunting rifle. Good old dad gave it to me when he fell off a cliff, which we never really get into. That's kind of like sidestepped and also brought up at the end.
That's all a bit of a dead end, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like we're supposed to know about this, but we don't. Like, I think it got cut in the editing. I don't know what happens. So we go hunting on our favorite aunt's property, or actually we go to her house, and then we just drive out somewhere. We basically trespass people's property in the middle of summer, and we're shooting at deer, and then something happens, and then the whole thing goes tits up, and we go on this quest. Did I pretty much sum it up?
Yeah, pretty much. Going back to the shadiness of Bruce Willis's character, I kind of had a feeling that, as you've just mentioned about Hayden Christensen's dad,
yes,
almost like, oh, is Bruce Willis going to have something to do with the death of his dad? Do you know what I mean?
The only reason we even know his dad's died is because he says something to his son later about, like, this is my dad's rifle. He gave it to me. One day, son, I'll give it to you. And then he talks about how this guy was the police chief back when his dad was still here before his accident. And, like, we allude to things, but we never, normally there's a moment where we sit down and our character has soft music playing, sad music, probably drinking a beer, smoking a cigarette on the porch, something dramatic. The sun is setting or it's rising. One of these two things is happening. And he tells his wife or his son the story, possibly a flashback of when good old Pa fell off Walton Mountain or whatever the fuck how he falls. The thing is we learn later in the film that he may or may not have been pushed off this cliff or whatever. We never see this cliff. We don't know why he's on this cliff. We don't know why he got pushed off the cliff. We have no idea why the events of his father dying, which was deemed an accident, but as we learn later in the film, wasn't an accident. It really is just like in passing. It's really like, it's almost like you're walking by a cafe or a restaurant and you heard a discussion and you heard someone say something and you walked off and you have no idea why what they just said actually happened. And that is basically the gist, because it has, there's no weight to the story.
Yeah. Well, like I say, I always felt like watching it that, oh, you know, because there is the, like you said, there's the ambiguity of Bruce Willis's character.
Mm-hmm.
So I was constantly thinking, you know, it's going to turn out that Bruce Willis killed his dad. Otherwise, as you've said, you know, why is it even there, really?
I mean, you paid more attention to it than I did, because when he finally brought up at the end, I was like, oh, that's right, his dad did die of something. Like, I was like, so, didn't no, matter
I'm
at
just,
all.
I was just trying to find a reason for Bruce Willis. Because the dad comes up a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, well, this has got to all mean something. And like you say, turns out, no, it doesn't.
We don't know if his dad's a piece of shit. We don't know if his...
Well, no, but if he would have just said at the beginning, this was my dad's rifle, that's all you needed to say.
I feel like there's a scene or two cut out in this film that goes in. Yeah. Like, I feel like there's... The other stuff, while they're talking about it, they keep it in because it leads right into something. You know, normally, like, leads into it, like, oh, and then, boom, we got to go into this. There must be, like, two or three other scenes in the film, like, you know, let's trim this down. We're going to make sure that Scott and Steve in the future don't have to watch past 100 minutes. Thank you very much. And they'll be very happy to knock this film out in under and just a little over an hour and a half. And we won't have to talk about it, because there is no point at the film where it's so meaningless that I forgot it even meant anything. And then when he brings it up and when we find out the truth, there's no stakes involved. Like, well, I guess basically giving it away. But Bruce, for some reason, his character pushed his father off a fucking cliff, apparently, 20 years ago. And... We have no idea why. We don't know what that meant to Hayden's character. We don't know why he pushed him. We don't know anything about his father outside that he gave him a hunting rifle and he fell down a fucking cliff. So it goes from him being a fucking the town fuckwad who somehow found his way off a cliff and fell. And now everyone's like, look at this fucking idiot. To
Hayden,
like, oh, he was murdered.
Even,
but we don't know why he was murdered. Does anyone know? How about this? I'll give
don't
this.
Even know if he
anyone
did push
can
him
tell
off.
Me why Bruce
I'm not
Willis's
even sure
character
he did push him off the cliff.
Pushed his father off the cliff. What the reason was.
I think you might have made that up.
You can host this show for an episode because you know more than we do.
I don't even know if he did push him off a cliff.
Well, he says he did. At one point.
Did he?
Yeah. Well,
I watched this movie twice, man.
The final stand-up. A stand-up.
Yeah.
He says, that's
why
I pushed your dad. Well, why? There had to be a reason. His dad had to do something. Like, he was either... They either had a falling out.
He really wanted his rifle, I guess.
Apparently.
Yeah, no, now you say it. Now you...
Like,
now you
just
kind of
like...
You're like,
I don't know why this happened. There's no point.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think Bruce Willis himself, if he were still able to... carry on a conversation. If we were to sit Bruce down and go, Mr. Willis, do you know why your character in First Kill pushed Hayden Christensen's father off a cliff? Was any backstory given to you? He'd probably be like, I got no fucking idea. I know as much about this. You know what? This is the new, what's it, Marcellus Wallace's case. If anyone can tell us why they think Bruce Willis pushed this guy's father off the cliff, we got a new one.
Do you know what, though? I think all that stuff kind of takes a backseat to me, because there are things I do like about this movie.
Oh, yes, but I want to finish shitting on one more thing, because I said at the top, I'm sorry.
No, you're not allowed.
I noticed it early.
You're not allowed.
I noticed this very early. I don't know who the fuck color graded this film. If you read my review of it, my biggest review of this is, you know what, I'm going to bring it up, because I'm starting to review a few things.
This cocksucker is quoting himself, people.
Yes,
because
you know what?
He's egotistical.
I wrote this so late last night when I watched it. I don't actually remember what the fuck I said, I'll be honest with you. I don't want to misquote myself.
If you want me to write reviews, you fucking pay me.
I said this film was color graded by a fucking toddler with a 120 count box of Crayola crayons. This thing goes through more color schemes, more different colors. The colors change in this fucking film. You can see all kinds of things that shouldn't be happening in this film. This was an awful job. And I know I'm probably nitpicking something because I worked in the industry for a little bit here. But it was one of the first things I noticed. This is my second. I said, who the fuck color graded this film? And this isn't the opening titles when they're driving. Now you could tell. It is awful. Absolutely awful. Just watch how this thing changes hues and brightness. It's fucking terrible. Awful. That really hurts when that pulls you out of the film, when I'm fucking constantly going, who the fuck color graded this? Sorry. Anyways, I will now return with the pullover scene. I say, strong start for Mr. Willis. I was like, Bruce is still in 2017 was a strong year. Might not have put out a technical theatrical release. But once upon a time in this, he definitely still was in the game. He was still firing.
Well, I think he is certainly a co-star in this.
100%. Yeah, he's not the lead. No.
He's not a lead, but it's not a cameo.
Not a cameo either. True.
It nestles right in the middle there. Is a very decent co-starring credit.
Maybe that's why he didn't have anything else come out in 2017. He did the one lead role, so he had this role, and he was able to stay on set more. So, I mean, you know, normally Perhaps. He's on set, what, a day, 2 days?
Well, that accounts for $2 million of those dollars. But yeah, you know, he's a co-star in this. But when he pulls Hayden Christensen over at the early in the film, I felt immediately like this guy's shady. At the same time, you know, maybe I'm giving it too much credit, but at that point, I was like, or is this like a red herring in itself?
That's what I was thinking too.
I think he's shady, but it's going to turn out.
They played it very close to the vest. Because he does go through a lot of police procedural still anyways. You know what I mean? So they do a good job of trying to hide it till we get our final twist. Well, not rich, but we finally get a kind of a reveal.
The reveal.
At the end. Because we're not sure. Because there's that moment when he and the other guy who we know is dirty, and they're standing in the woods and he point gun at each other. And he goes, you got the money? He goes, I might. You know what I mean? So you're kind of like, oh, maybe.
Yeah.
And then there's the gunshot, and then we don't know until... We then, you know, then that's the reveal type of thing, because we're supposed to be led to believe maybe one of the two of them shot each other, you know. So they definitely are trying. The filmmakers are trying to keep us on the back foot with what Bruce's motive really is. If he's a bad guy,
his role is.
Yeah.
And you know, speaking of the budget at $10 million, because we do get a small cameo from Dave Bautista in this movie, don't we?
Yes, that's the fucking action figure. Should have jammed that fucking bully's asshole, and this movie's over with in 5 seconds. We got a very quick short film. The first kill.
Yeah, his movie's a stop motion movie.
Exactly.
Right?
This first kill is takes a whole new
role. Little action figures. But yeah, they do a good job of kind of like, because like, yeah, I was thinking, oh, is he shady, or are we supposed to think he's shady all the way through, and then event at the end he comes through as the hero sheriff, blah-de-blah.
That was, I definitely felt that was definitely where they
a possibility,
were. Yeah. I even had my notes. I said, can't tell if Bruce is good or bad yet. Because he has the moments of like, he might be. And then he's like, he does something else. You're like, oh, well, I don't know. He's working the police procedure. Like, he's actually trying to solve this crime, which is like, someone who is not trying to solve this crime wouldn't be. And you're kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
So
well,
I was happy with
like
them keeping us off kilter, because a lot of times you see these things
like
signposts. The minute the movie starts, you're like, oh, I know where this is headed.
Yeah, but he's not a pantomime villain. He's very...
He's great.
Pretty much, he's pretty much by the book. Sheriff, strictly business, so it seems, throughout most of the movie. And he does it, you know.
Yeah.
He's Mr. Reliable in that sense, isn't he?
He is Mr. Reliable.
He does his Bruce Willis.
Well,
Bruce is his most Bruce Willis.
Trademarked by the Cheeky Bastard podcast. I actually really like Hayden Christensen. I think he is a really underrated actor. He got a lot of crap because he played a very tough role of being Anakin Skywalker in the Star Wars prequels. And I think he's good in those. He had to be whiny in the second one. Which anyone who's a fan of Mark Hamill, he was whiny as fuck in Star Wars.
I've never seen... This is the first film...
This is the first film you've seen him in.
It's the first film I've seen him in, because I haven't watched...
Well, he's spectacular in Revenge of the Sith when he makes the dark turn to become Darth Vader, and I thought he was really good in this film. I thought he showed really good acting chops. He was very believable. I liked him very, very much in this film. I'm not sure about you, but I thought for a little bit... At first, I didn't think he was going to make it past the first 10 minutes, but Gethin Anthony is basically the other main actor we go with, because we break up and do like a three-part story at one point where everyone's moving around. So Willis is trying to solve the crime. Hayden's out trying to recover the money to get his son back, and Gethin's got his son, and he's the guy who was sent to do this robbery, but maybe a patsy of the cops. And that's kind of the flesh of the story. So we have like a three-person story we're going with. And Gethin, you know, the first moment was like, all right, but he actually is also pretty good. So this is a pretty decently acted film for the most part, except for this kid, and we'll get to him in a second. This fucking kid.
I did like the relationship with Hayden Christensen and his son. You know, it has its moments where it's quite sort of, not necessarily relatable, but quite sweet and quite sort of, you can see how they're trying to reconnect. So Hayden Christensen, like I say, this is the first time I'd seen him in a movie. And I thought he played the quite sensitive father. I think he played that quite well. I can tell where you're now going to go, but I didn't have a problem with it. I'm going to say this now because I don't really want to get into it. I didn't. Go ahead. But no, I didn't really have a problem with the kid.
Really? I thought he couldn't act. I don't think he could act his way out of a fucking paper bag.
Well, I don't like children in general.
Fair.
So let's get that out of the way. That's why I don't have any. You know when people say to you, "God, Steve, you don't know how tough it is till you've had kids." I'm like, "Yes, I do. That's why I don't fucking have any." But anyway,
my thing is, I hate kids in movies.
I didn't have a problem with him.
In B movies, they're all fucking dumb idiots who trip on their dicks every chance they get. And at one point, I fucking hate this kid and his fucking mother. Like, his dad, they're at the climax. His dad says, lay down in the fucking deer blind. Don't fucking move. What's the first thing this fucking prick does? Stands up and looks out. Fucking asshole. And then his Arnold Schwarzenegger moment. When a cop comes up to get him, where this piece of wood came from, we've never seen it. But apparently there's a piece of wood lying about up in the deer blind. This kid's now going to use a weapon. He goes, that's enough. And it's the guy in the face and knocks him out of the tree.
Well, in his defense, I'll say he's in a fucking hut made of wood.
But so the deer line is built, out of the realms was built, and it's up there.
No. But
I get it.
No. Listen, Let me finish. That's not out of the realms of possibility that there might be a fucking piece of
wood
in there.
That deer blind is built professionally, so they built it. I'm saying is normally, as movies do, they show you that there's something up there that you can use when he first gets up there.
Oh, so you need a signposted to it. So you needed a signposted to it.
If all of a sudden Bruce Willis pulled out a samurai sword at the end of that fucking film, you'd be like, where did the samurai sword come from? When was he lugging this about?
Take a deep breath.
Nah.
Take a deep breath.
This kid fucking sucked.
All right.
That moment fucking sucked.
You're not bigger than
this. And everybody else is going to go, where the fuck this piece of wood come from? Steve apparently
I could probably
is fine.
Point out. I could probably, you know what? I could probably point out 50 movies where you had no problem with that.
You
exact
point
thing
out one of them. You point out
like
one
them.
Of them. I'll wait. Go to Letterboxd and get your information.
I'm on.
Go to Letterboxd.com and get your information.
100 best timber shots in a movie.com. Okay.
It's called
I've got wood.com. All the time. When a guy's having a fight in a fucking warehouse with someone, and there
Hold
just
on.
Happens to
I
be
will, I will even
a
clue
fucking...
you in how they even did this in the film. When Hayden Christensen's character is getting choked by the only Italian sounding guy in the film. he was the mobster.
He's like
a fucking beam and you're dead. I'm like, I was like,
hey, where's
it's
your
like, who's Vinny over here?
Who's
fucking Vinny Goombas?
Yeah, but actually,
he might be our mascot.
But you know what? The funny thing is, you know the corrupt
in the beginning,
cop who gets shot at the beginning. They're brothers.
Yeah. No,
but he's
no.
not Italian American. No.
They're brothers. From a different mother and father, but they're brothers nonetheless. Yeah,
he was the most miscast person in the whole movie.
He's the one guy who looks like he's dirty the minute you see him. You go, this guy's up to no good.
Now, this guy robbed a fucking bank.
And then he's like, hey, boss, I fucking found a guy. You know what I'm saying? Over here, he's grabbing his dick. He's like, you want some pizza?
I'm funny out. And I'll tell you what, if you want to get into annoying fucking characters, man,
At the end when she's crying, that's what I said. I hate this kid and his mother. She's fine until the end when she's screaming and crying. I was like, you know what? Let Bruce shoot her. I was thinking, hey, how about Hayden Christensen just shoots through her and hits them both? Everybody wins.
He's thinking, you know what? There's a pretty good way out of this. But listen, you know, on a few episodes ago on the Cheeky Bastards, available wherever you get your podcast.
Especially
from,
on the Last Day Action Heroes podcast.
I was pointing out how, you know, with the whole culture at the moment and having women in leading roles and some of them are so badly written, they're really shoehorned in there. She's like the opposite. She's just the most fucking annoying character. And you're like, you know, she's a doctor. She's all this. She's a loving mother. But she's the most whiny bitch in this whole movie. So, yeah, all right, you think the kid's an annoying little fuck. I'll give you that.
Because, you know, she doesn't have a lot to do in the beginning. She just talks. But, yes, at this end, when she's captured and just won't, she reminded me a little bit of the girl in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood when she just won't stop screaming and you're so thankful when Rick Dalton lights her on fire with the flamethrower. I was hoping for the same kind of moment. I was hoping for a flamethrower moment.
That would have been great if
Rick Dalton just shows up out of the blue.
Yeah, no, I'll give you, yeah. But, you know, so, all right, there's annoying... But yeah, I'm glad you said that about the Italian American cop who looks like he's wandered in from The Sopranos. hey, you're weird.
Have you seen the Sopranos episode without they're looking for the Ukrainian guy or the Russian guy, and then they lose him in the woods? He's the guy. They left him. They left him out there. He's still looking for him. Oh, I wandered my way to Ohio. I became a cop.
Oh, you know me.
Hey, Paulie, I think that fucking guy Beeman, I think he's up to something. Must follow him. He was like, where'd they cast this guy?
Yeah, that was pretty strange, I must admit.
I mean, because we had our boy. We had a mainstay. We had Mr. Tyler John Olsen, TJO.
That's where I was then going.
He could have been
yeah.
there. He was in it for like 3 seconds.
Yeah, he's probably one
he
of the
been
best
much better. Yeah.
Actors in the like, whole.
Nah, we got to let Vinny Stugagano over here. We got to let him go. I think his name was William DeMeo, Billy D. Billy DeMeo over here.
Hey,
oh,
Billy
we doing,
D
Billy?
Over here. Your
over
a
here. I'm banging fucking Steven C. Miller's ma. You know what I'm saying? I'm getting in the picture. I'm in the picture. Sorry.
He's actually a screenwriter as well, that guy. He's been all over the place, this guy.
Yeah, he's going to write his first ever marinara western. It's an Italian-American western. Mary, oh,
hey, Wild Bill,
Mary,
your mother's
westerns
a
over here. All right, sorry, we have really such Billy D sidetracked us over here.
Let's get back.
However,
on
Billy
track.
D's the one who takes a significant amount of wood to the face and falls off a ladder.
I've heard he you does. Take oh, some Billy, wood to the face. No,
Billy D.
So yeah, all right. So you think the kid's annoying? I think the wife's annoying.
Oh, he is annoying. He's terrible.
No, he's. I thought the kid was pretty good.
He's decent in some of his moments with what's his face? I just talked about the guy who ends up being our
Gethin Anthony.
I mean, this one you always know you set yourself apart from a B movie and a movie that people are like. Oh, this is good. It comes down to the archetypes that people continue to use in these terrible B movies. So we have to now feel like, oh, we feel bad for the situation of Levi. That's his name, right? Levi, the guy who robs the bank and all this other stuff. And of course, we got to feel bad because he's got some fat trailer park piece of shit mom-in-law. I stole the $2 million so I could help with her cancers and her other ailments. I'm a guy that's a bleeding heart. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done these things. I mean, you guys gotta feel bad for me. It's like, no, you fucking stole $2 million because you want to steal $2 million. When did you think when they pulled you over and Billy D shows up and is like, hey, listen here, pal. My friends and I want you to steal $2 million from the bank. You drop us off a bit of the money. You keep a bit of the money. Everybody goes to separate. Everything's good. So I really don't love when we have to pretend like, oh, now we gotta have like a, we feel bad for him because he's kidnapped a kid. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
now
no,
we have
but
to be like, oh, well, now the reason is because, oh, he had his fat ass mother, dying of diabetes, the gout. Like, she's got cancer. She's got everything. She's got
scurvy.
She's got scurvy. I think she's been on a pirate ship for some reason.
That's not true. But no, I mean, in the defense of that, obviously, look, you got the corrupt cops who want the money. He's doing it because he needs the money, which obviously that means that when you see his backstory and you see that he's got paid in
Christensen's
kid, you know
that he's not going to hurt him. I got you.
Know the kid's
but,
son.
But wouldn't you have liked a little bit more of a danger?
No, but what I'm saying is it's there. No, I'm just saying it's there. I'm just saying it's there for a reason. It's not like. It's not just a tropey trope.
No, I know, but would you have felt a little bit more interested in this film if we didn't feel like he was completely safe?
No, because, and my reason, I'll tell you why, is because I don't think Hayden Christensen is that good. I think he's a far better character than Hayden Christensen. So I'll forgive them tropes because Hayden Christensen's not a strong enough actor or character to keep the stakes as intense as they end up being. I think the relationship between Levi and the child is far more interesting and entertaining, as it turns out, than the relationship between Hayden Christensen and his son. So I think, I mean, to get into it a bit, I think Levi is quite a multi-layered, sensitive character. And I think Hayden Christensen is a little bit by the numbers. And I think you needed him because Hayden Christensen's not a strong enough lead. So I guess the lead is split between the two, is what I'm saying. Yeah. So you got Hayden Christensen. Yeah, you got Hayden Christensen and Gethin Anthony as Levi. And between the two of them, you get your good guy. I don't think either of them are good enough on their own. So it's a little bit of a sort of
That's a fair assessment.
It's a little bit of a sort of like, well, we're saying the same, you know, we're kind of
and it may be why we both feel like it's just kind of one of those middle of the road, kind of forgettable movies, unless we dig into and make fun of things.
Yeah. We're toing and froing, but really, you've got Bruce Willis. Okay.
And we have Billy Dee. What if Billy Dee was the lead? Just kidding.
Billy Dee should have played the kid. Oh. Hey, Pops, suck my dick over here. But no, so I like that relationship between Levi and the kid, because I don't think Hayden is good enough on his own. Not just, I don't mean he's not a very good actor. I mean, I'm sure he's a very good actor, but
The
character he's been given is a little bit wishy-washy, a little bit middle of the road.
We get more backstory from Levi than we do, like we just talked about. We have no idea why Hayden's father in the film is that. We have no clue. And it seems to be something that's pivotal because he left that town after the age of 10. We have no idea of anything.
Yeah, I mean, not to get too into it, but I think Levi understands the kid more than his own dad does. And I think it says a lot about Levi. And the kind of person he is, where it's revealed, you know, because he gets an arc of you start off thinking he's just a piece of shit redneck bad guy, and it turns out he's an extremely sensitive, kind, loving father to be. Obviously, Levi's wife is pregnant, and I think he's kind of learning how to be. This is like an opportunity for him to learn to be a father before he even is one.
True.
That's what I sort of came away with.
And it's also a little back look at how that Hayden Christensen lost his father so early. Maybe that's why he's not as good a father, because he doesn't have one.
Exactly. No, that's actually.
Is this a better written film than we think?
Oh my god, this is a fucking masterpiece. No, but what I was actually you're right. But what I was gonna say was the stuff with Hayden and his son. Hayden is doing what he thinks that's where
a father needs to do.
He thinks this is the stuff a father needs to do to bond with his son. Mm-hmm. Whereas Levi's extremely sensitive and says some things I think that are really quite sweet and quite, and that just Hayden just does what I think he just does the dad thing that has been done in a million movies. And I just think Levi's just handled a lot more sensitively and maybe in a more clever manner. So I'm a little bit more like the guy playing Levi isn't leading man material.
No,
I would say Hayden clearly is, because he played fucking Darth Vader. Yeah. So, you know, but I just think I don't think his character is good enough, but I think the guy playing Levi is better. And between the two, we get some decent.
We get two versions of the father.
Yeah. And we get some fat to chew on there, you know? And then of course, it all kind of goes to shit, you know, double crosses
and then the ending does the ending's where it gets strong and weak at the same time. So we finally get the real action piece where we get the shootout, which is fun because we get Bruce Willis doing a shootout and the whole thing. I enjoy it. But there's I think you've watched it twice now. I'm surprised you missed the kid in the woods. He's terrible up in the thing. And then Levi coming back to life to distract Bruce's character to get him to shoot at him so he can get shot. Like, that was a bizarre decision. But my favorite part, and you have to watch it again, and I know because we're probably caught up in it, but when the kid runs over there to Levi and he's like, Levi, and he kind of shakes him, he does the move, just kind of gets him going, all right, what are you gonna do? It's kind of like the look he goes, that's the first thing in my head, goes, all right, what are you gonna do?
Levi, the thing with Levi is he did rob the bank.
He did.
Yeah. So he kind of has to pay.
Oh no, this is an American movie, they have to pay. That's why I talked about Heat earlier in the year. They always have to pay.
Yeah, no, I kind of get that. But so he's kind of got that tragic, you know, he's a tragic character.
Well, at this point, other things have also happened, which you kind of alluded to saying something about somebody, and some things happened tragically in his life anyway. So it may be best for him anyways.
Yeah. So,
I mean, there's no way he doesn't go to prison. He's kidnapped a kid. And he's robbed a bank. Even if he did it with the best of intentions, the justice just doesn't see it that way.
That's what I'm saying. So that's kind of like, that was no surprise to me that he was going to die. And I kind of felt like, well, he had to, really. That was the only way. And he knew it, though. He knew, you know, he was doomed. So he went out, you know, he kind of went out heroically to save this kid and blah-de-blah. Blah. So, yeah, I mean, it's not, look, I've been as deep as I'm willing to be. I've probably been deeper than this movie deserves in what I've said, you know, regarding Levi and the kid. I'll just say it kind of ends how you kind of know it's going to. yeah, kind of, yeah. There's no frills there.
There's no real stakes at the end of the day. It's fun, but like we said,
it's competent. It does.
Yeah.
It does everything. It just about gets
away. It's well filmed. The pacing is actually pretty good. We don't get mired down and bogged down in too much bullshit. We do move along. You know, I mean, the ending is exactly what you expect from an action ending. We do the bad guy's got a monologue and tell us why he's doing the things he does before we shoot him. Eventually, we shoot him. Again, the movie first kill, you think it's all about the kid getting his first kill. At the end of the day, I realize it's actually Hayden Christensen who got his first kill.
Yep.
And the kid's like, I'm telling you, the kid at the end is fucking terrible, folks. I disagree with Steve 100%. The kid at the end is fucking awful. He sucks in the treehouse. He's got the gun. I can do it, Dad. I wanted him to shoot that kid right then and there. Shoot the kid. The kid shoots Bruce. Everyone wins. Mom might get shot.
He might have a lot of mental problems, I think.
It was terrible. I'm sorry. Kid was fucked. Anywho. But, yeah, it kind of ends. And at the end of the movie, I was like, you know what? I didn't hate it. And then I was like, it's not great. But I was like, if the rest of them are like this, I will be okay with it. Been like, you know what? I didn't mind saying that I watched that once. You know, it would be one of those like, you know what? I've knocked it off my list. I can now say I've seen this Bruce Willis movie.
Here's the thing, though. I was talking to someone, not to go too far off topic, but I was talking to someone the other night about, and I'm not really, clearly not comparing them, but we were talking about the movie It Follows, the horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they were like, well, I didn't love it. It wasn't brilliant. And I'm like, does everything have to be?
Well, I would disagree. I think it is kind of brilliant.
Well, no, he was an idiot, obviously.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is, look, it's not a masterpiece. They're called masterpieces for a reason. Yeah, not everything's a masterpiece. Some things are just okay. Yes. You know, even if you think it's just an okay horror movie, that's good enough. And this is just an okay straight to video.
It's one of those ones you would be like, you know what? That was not a waste of my 90 minutes. It wasn't bad. There were some moments I enjoyed.
It's just,
clearly, like we both realized it's a deeper story than we talked about.
Yeah, I'm just getting this thing.
There's
a lot
Billy
of the time
D.
Like, hey.
Yeah, Ovi.
Yeah, I'm just getting this feeling a lot of the time nowadays where it's like, well, it's no masterpiece. And I'm like, believe me, many films that I love are not masterpieces.
Most films are not masterpieces.
No,
and they're not supposed to be. That's how we know what a masterpiece is.
I mean, this is far below par. I'm not.
How about this? Look at your kids' fucking finger paintings and then go to a museum and go, oh, my kid's a fucking idiot. It's not as great as you fucking think they are, all right?
Yeah.
They're not there yet. They're not masters.
But the kids. Finger paint and
it's probably a masterpiece
meaningful.
For other drooling fuckwads in this class.
Well, a lot of the time they're more meaningful than a fucking Picasso. Do you know what I mean?
And you know, we've asked for a lot of things in films, and this didn't give any of them, but it also didn't pretend to be something it wasn't. Also, I can appreciate that. Better than some of the films I've seen this year that were from big directors. I can be honest with you that.
Bingo.
They at least told their story in fucking 90 minutes and not 3.5 hours where I had to watch the indigenous people of America be poisoned and fucking Leonardo DiCaprio look like he's been sucking on a lemon the entire afternoon. Like, we could have got that done in about 2:15 and not 3 hours. We could have saved ourselves.
Is what you sat through.
Move forward with the story. 45 minutes of this broad being poisoned. I was like, I want to kill somebody at this
point. But that's kind of made me laugh with Scorsese kind of championing cinema. And how we all need to go to the cinema more often.
Yes.
Okay, mate, we'll stop making movies that are 4 hours long.
Drop that bag! Are you kidding me? Drop that bag. You're under arrest.
Oh, yeah, what for?
For murdering an officer of the law.
And aiding a bank heist, you idiot!
Oh, man, you got this all wrong. All right, I know this doesn't look good, but I can explain, all right?
Yeah.
It's fine. All right, it's true. But it was self-defense. I was just trying to protect my son.
And now, let's talk about... This was a tough one, trying to figure out some of the favorites. But we'll start with our favorite scene, and I have no idea who's supposed to go first anymore.
Favorite scene.
This is almost your birthday month coming up, too. This will be right before your birthday. We'll do, I think, an episode after your birthday. So, for your birthday, you get to go first. What was your favorite scene from this movie?
My favorite scene is between Levi and the kid when they're in the bunker. And they're talking about, because the kid is he's a bullied kid, basically, which is why the family have gone on this whole hunting trip to bond. And the dad's going to show him how to be a man. But there's a scene in the bunker, in Levi's little hidden bunker, where he's kind of teaching him sort of how to stand up to bullies, basically. He said, if you get nose to nose with a bully, he says, 99 times out of 100, they'll back down. And the kid says, yeah, but what about that one time he doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
And Levi says, hit him. You know, that's
everything
when you got
to
hit
have. Him. Yeah.
And he says, or run away. And he said, there's nothing wrong with doing either of those things. And I just thought that was, you know, that was just, I just liked the scene. I think that was one of the few well-lit scenes. Because, you know, they're in the dark bunker, there's the fire burning, and you really see the sensitivity and kindness of Levi, and you can really see that the kid is getting it. He understands what Levi is saying. And I think that is one of the better written scenes in the movie, and I think that's where we really get the sort of the relationship, mm-hmm. the surprising relationship between Levi and the kid. Well, it's surprising because it seems to me better than the relationship with Hayden Christensen and the kid. So, yeah, to me, it's just a well-written, performed, directed scene where he kind of teaches him about what to do with about bullies. And that's just a well-written scene. That's the one that I would go for.
I enjoy that scene as well. However, I think one of my favorite scene is our very first meeting between Willis and Hayden, the reunion parking lot scene. As you said, there's a bit of subtext being hidden in there. I love the way it's mostly to do because of Bruce, because I think Bruce is really spectacular in this film in the moments he's in. He keeps us guessing the entire film if he's good or bad for the most part. It was a free willing banter. I actually felt like these two had chemistry. These two actually knew each other. It was a quick little back and forth. We learned a few little things. There's some nice exposition in that moment, but it just felt like, I don't know, it just felt like a Bruce Willis moment that you get from his normal movies, like the regular direct to this theater movies. He comes in, he's talking. That's what I said. You feel at ease. You don't feel danger. There's a little, maybe a hint of, am I good or am I bad? But we don't, oh, it's not over the top. Like, you better be safe. You better watch yourselves. I'm watching you. That kind of thing. He's like reminiscing with him, talking about, oh, that's right. You're William, but everyone calls you Billy. Like, he's going back to the way he used to be when he was a kid. I hadn't seen him in 20 years. There's these moments we get this. There's a lot he's able to deliver so we know about the two of them and where he comes from within that moment, obviously without knowing why his dad died or how he died and all this stuff. But I thought it was really great. And that's why it was my first note. I was like, Bruce, great freaking opening scene. I was like, this is a great moment for Bruce. And Hayden, I thought, was spectacular. And to the two of them, I felt the reality that these two had known each other before, had been in this town before, and really had a backstory. Some of these movies we go, these two have never met. This is the first time they're even actually meeting each other on screen. Like they said, action. They may have rehearsed once. So I really enjoyed that. Your scene also was really good, but I don't want to take two scenes in the same. So. My second was when we found out Billy D was from New Jersey. Hey, Billy, you fucking dead.
I will say this about your scene as well, that I was like, oh, Bruce Willis is going to be in this.
Yes, yes, yes. Like, he's not just going to be like, oh, here's a paycheck. He was like, hey, guess what? I'm the fucking sheriff.
He's in the movie as a co-star, and he's not going to phone it in. He's literally in the movie. He's there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I get why you picked that scene too, yeah.
Best one-liner.
All right, our best one-liner. Now, your scene was one of the ones I thought about. However, I chose this one, and it was from early on when I first get there. And it's interesting. When I chose it, I just thought it was a really nice, well-written line. But after our discussion, I'm realizing that as you go through this movie, you think the first kill is for the son. At the end of the day, it's actually Hayden Christensen. And this is really more of a speech that he gives to his son about hunting that really ends up being more prevalent to him than he knows. And he says to his son, for thousands of years, men have viewed hunting as something much more than just a means of survival, Danny. Okay? It's a test of character and courage. I mean, the singular act of tracking another living creature, Danny, and then possessing the will and skill to end its life. And you think he's just trying to get his son pumped up to go deer hunting and shooting a deer. Son never fires the gun. He's the one who has to make the decision to kill the person in the beginning of the film to save their life. He's the one who makes that decision. The exact same thing he's kind of telling his son. Do you have the will and the skill to end someone's life? And you don't realize it until you go through the film. So this film is a little bit deeper. No,
well,
this film's a little bit deeper. Like it's not, it's there. There's surface level to being something more. It's just, stronger hands and a little bit more. Yeah. It's one of those films where, like, just missed out by these small details that are important.
Yeah.
If anything, this is also teaching us, besides that there's sex trafficking going on, is that in better hands, you understand the difference between these guys who are haven't made it and the ones who have made it. The ones who have made it make it for a reason. They are skilled. And these other gentlemen and ladies who are not at their level, they have talent. They're just not at that level of mastery. That's where masterpieces come from.
Absolutely.
And I now thank you for you coming to my TED Talk.
And now it's can't. No, I totally agree with everything you just said. Because I'm a pretentious
Welcome
cunt.
To the Pretentious Cunt Podcast. Where yeah,
let's get rid
this
of
this week.
No, we're not the cheeky bastards anymore.
We're the pretentious cunts now.
Probably not true.
What's your favorite one-liner? And why is it Joey D saying, you fucking dead, B-man?
Your man is I haven't got a one-liner.
Oh.
I've just got an exchange.
Okay.
Quite frankly, I couldn't find a one-liner. This movie is devoid of humor.
It is. Yeah, I thought about that too. Like, it's not even a funny bit.
There's no quips, no nothing.
Not even like a strong, like, you shoot him in the face. You know, like something like you go, oh shit, he just told his son to do that.
If anything happens to my son, I'll hunt you all down and I'll fucking bite your face. Yeah, anything. Yeah.
And then fuck your dead corpses.
Anything. But there was nothing like that. So this is a scene, again, with Levi and the kid. And basically, this is later in the movie when Levi knows Hayden Christensen is coming with the
money,
the loot. He says to the kid, he says, as soon as your dad gets here, this will all be over. It'll just be some cool story to tell your friends back at school. And the kid says, I don't really have any friends. And Levi says, then it'll just be some cool story you can tell to help you make some. That's it. I just thought that was sweet. And
very
I just
sweet.
Thought, you know, well acted. And it just kind of, just sort of worked for me. But it was difficult. It's difficult to find there was no one-liners. Nothing really stood out to me as a kind of, like you say, a quip or a badass threat or
a funny joke, a little throwaway line, something that was just like, oh, whoa, that guy said that?
Yeah. So I did find it difficult, actually.
Yeah.
That was one of the main reasons I watched it twice, to see if I could find a one-liner.
And at what point in the film did you realize, oh, shit, I'm supposed to be looking for these lines? Forgot.
Yeah, exactly.
Shit, I'm an hour.
Jesus Christ, the credits
lines.
Are rolling.
Fucking Billy D did it to me again. Best performance. Well, I think I know where you're going to go for this one, but what is your best performance from First Kill?
Best performance, to me, no question, is Geffen Anthony as Levi. I was a bit like, who is this guy? Because he's relatable. It just seemed effortless to me. He was quite vulnerable, but he wasn't a hothead. Didn't overact. Didn't like weren't like chewing the scenery. He was just quite subtle performance. And I'd never heard of him before. Never seen him since. I looked at his filmography. He's not really done anything that I would have seen him in. He has done other stuff, but he was just a bit sort of like, who is this guy? I like this guy. You know, and I think he was really believable as Levi. So, he's my favorite performance.
Now, I will admit that I came in to this one with a little bit of baggage because I felt that my favorite performer, which will be Hayden Christensen, has gotten a shit rap because of the zealot Star Wars fan base who I am a part of, but also thinks is a bunch of fucking assholes who need to get their shit together. Stop being a bunch of whiny fucking pieces of shit and get out of their mother's basements, all right? Hayden Christensen was spectacular as Anakin Skywalker and then Darth Vader, so get the fuck over it and move on. So coming into this, I was hoping Hayden was going to show his acting chops that I felt he showed then. I just think people gave him a hard time because they wanted the character to be something different than it was. And I thought he was really strong in his role. He played a pretty decent, I mean, again, like you said, he's a Wall Street banker. So he walks a very fine line of not overstepping it and becoming Bruce Willis, John McClane. He doesn't turn into Rambo Dad, which I appreciate. He does walk the line of, I'm just trying to do what I have to do to get my fucking son back. You know what I mean? Like, and I like that. He did some things he had to, but he didn't become a vigilante. He wasn't suddenly solving the case. He knew what happened. He kind of figured it out, and he's like, he didn't give a fuck. So I don't give a shit. Take your money, shove it up your fucking ass. You can go rape that guy and his wife when I'm done. I just want my son back. Basically, you know, and I like that he stuck there, because a lot of times you start to become like a Boy Scout. It's like, oh, I'm going to save everybody in the town. They're going to know my name. And I like that he didn't cross those lines. He was a bit of a, I wouldn't say a cold dad, but a guy who didn't really know how to connect with the son too well. You know, like he doesn't know how, because obviously his dad, for mysterious reasons, was pushed off a cliff. We'll never know. This is something we'll never know.
Favorite character.
Now, our favorite characters, mine, and I think we're going to have, I think I'm just going to go on a limb. We're going to pick the guys who were our best performances as a character, just my opinion. Mine is William Beeman, played by Hayden Christensen, with a very, the other two gentlemen, though, I mean, honestly, you could put each one of them in this as the best character, because even though the other two were supposedly side characters, they both bring a lot to their roles. Bruce Willis did a great job as the sheriff, keeping us unassured at the when we first are in this film for quite a while, not knowing, is Bruce in on this or is he not? Like, you really couldn't tell for a while. Like, they did a great job of dropping in little breadcrumbs but keeping us off kilter. Like you said, Levi's character was really good. He did a great job as we go through the film. But mine was William Beeman, because I really enjoyed what Hayden Christian brought to it. I enjoyed the fact, as I said about his performance, he did not turn into John McClane. He did not turn into John Rambo. He stayed William Beeman. For me, Mr. William Beeman, Mr. Smith, who's yours? And why is it again Willem D?
No, that's Levi. Yeah, it's got to be. I think it's just the kind of character that I always warm to, really. I wouldn't say too much, because I kind of said it already, you know, that he's kind of like the father figure. He's really the unlikely father figure. Mm-hmm. The unlikely hero is all, we all like the unlikely hero. Mm-hmm. And I think for such a middle-of-the-road movie, I think it was just an incredibly well-written unlikely hero, you know. So I've said it already, so I won't go around in circles on it, but yeah. Definitely for me, it was just the unlikely hero father figure of Levi.
That leads us to our moment of truth.
The moment of truth.
Mr. Smith, did Mr. Bruce Willis drop a deuce or a Bruce in our 11th film of our journey?
Bruce dropped a Bruce. He's in this movie. Obviously, he's not the lead. But he gives as much in this movie. He's probably given in any movie where he's not the lead. Regardless of being a straight-to-video movie or not, you know, he's invested. And I think he delivers a really good performance. So, yeah, for me, this is Bruce dropping a Bruce.
He most definitely dropped a Bruce.
I echo your sentiment, and Mr. Willis definitely dropped another Bruce, which is impressive. He's back on a good track at the moment. And like you said, he is really fucking good in this film. Again, we're not paying as much attention to him because, like I said, there are three stories going on. Two of them are the two father figures. One, learning that his choices in life, if he had gone a different way, could have been better. And he's trying to maybe impart that on this kid he's kidnapped. The other is a man who's realizing he's got to step up to the plate for his family and do more. And he's doing everything he can. And meanwhile, Bruce is under the surface. We don't know which side of the law he's on. He does a great job of keeping us unknowing to about the end. He doesn't give away too much. There's many moments in the film I thought, okay, he's bad. And I go, well, no, I think he's good. Like, he was able to keep being a chameleon throughout the film. When he's on screen, he delivers. There was one moment I kind of left out. There is a moment I do believe he reads off screen again. It's what it is. We know this is going to happen for him. But if it's a one-time moment, but he delivers. He delivers his lines. He's, you know, he's relatable. He's good in the shootout. He's Bruce Willis. He's Bruce Willis again. He has been awoken. In 2017, Bruce Willis was awake. He was back in his game. He was back in the saddle, as they say. And he dropped a motherfucking Bruce again. And we start off 2024 at least being able to say that. So that's good. Long way to go still in the journey. So we'll have to see how many more of these he actually is able to drop.
He most definitely dropped a Bruce.
Is this movie a Bruce or a deuce? This is where I was a little confounded at first when the film first ended, but it checks all the box that would tell me it's a Bruce, because regardless of the horrible film grading of this thing, that's not a fault of the people acting in it. I think this film does exactly what you ask a 90-minute B-movie to do, and that's be entertaining and make you feel like you didn't waste 90 minutes of your life. And as we've talked about it, clearly it was a lot deeper story than we first, on the surface level, gave it credit for. And so in that fact, I will give this a Bruce, a well-deserved Bruce. I'd say it's probably middle, not in our top five, but it's probably number six. Like, it's in the middle of the road of our first 12 that we're going to do in this first season. And deservedly so. It's above a bunch of the other piles of crap, but it's a nice middle of the road in that when this is all said and done, this will be one of those movies you look back and go, if you're going to watch some of these, we can tell you which of the 40 to watch. We go, that's probably one you're going to enjoy. It's not too bad. I think you'll like these actors. So well done, Mr. Willis. Another double for me. Another twofer. You doubled up with double Bruces.
This film was definitely dropped a Bruce.
I am giving this a Bruce because of Levi.
Okay. All right. It's fair.
You know, he elevated this movie for me. However, no, all right, that's a bit unfair. But he was the surprise of the movie, and he did elevate proceedings. But this is just a Sunday afternoon movie. This is just your belly's full of food, and you're just lazing around on the sofa. You flick through some channels. This comes on. You see Christensen's name. You see Bruce Willis, and you just think, how bad could this be?
Yeah, it's fair.
Now, there's a lot of movies where
you realize how bad it can be.
Yeah. You could be, oh, Jason Patrick, Bruce Willis, how bad can this be?
Yeah.
It can be very bad. But this is just one of those kind of, you know, middle of the road movies, elevated by three. Really, I'll say elevated by three main characters who bring their A game and make it an extremely pleasurable, passable 90 minutes of your time. You know, there's no Thomas Jane, unfortunately.
No.
And Levi
and
did
no Maloney,
not paint.
But...
And yeah, and Levi didn't have a painted fingernail. So no. that's why it's a, you know, it's a C+ only. But no, in all seriousness, it's a Bruce. It's a passable and pleasurable 90 minutes, elevated by three main characters. And you know what? What more do you want? What more do you want?
This film was definitely dropped a Bruce.
So there you go, folks. We've got a double Bruce. A double Bruce again. Four films in a row. Can we end season number one with another double Bruce? Is that a possibility? I mean, for Valentine's Day, if acts of violence doesn't say bring loved ones next to each other, have a box of chocolate, some wine, and get ready for one of the greatest romantic stories of all time, I don't know what else does. But that's what we got next. We've got acts of love to end season one, our first season down. And a big thank you, because we have been on this network the entire run so far, and the majority of our listeners come from this. And I know for Steve as well, thank you so much to Reimer Belkin and all the folks who put together the last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, and all of you who listen to us on it. We are extremely, extremely grateful, and want you to know that our appreciation of you has not gone silently. We love that you listen
silently
to us,
not.
And that you're also going to listen to us on the Cheeky Bastards Men of Action, which will be out again in two weeks as well.
We got some treats for
Valentine's. We got some Valentine's Day treats. Yes, 2 weeks from now, we have a brotherly love battle as the Scott brothers, Mr. Ridley and Tony, go head-to-head in a Scott Brothers Smackdown to see which of the two films we've chosen, which you'll have to wait and check it out, are the better of the films. We still like both of them. So it's kind of I mean, it's not like we're like, oh, one's a pile of dog shit. You know, so, but we are reappraising them, because some of these films we have not seen in a while, and some have surprised us so far. Of like, oh, all right, maybe that wasn't as good as we remembered it when we were kids. But we hope you will continue to follow us on both of them, and we will see you again in February. And that will do it for our 11th episode. Please feel free to reach out to us on the show's socials, which can be found in the show notes, and tell us what you thought about this film, how you feel about Bruce as an actor, or even to let us know what you think about our show. We'd also greatly appreciate it if you give the show a like, leave us a review, and follow the show on the last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, where you can find other amazing podcasts dedicated to such iconic action stars as Stallone, Lundgren, Van Damme, Schwarzenegger, and Seagal. The link to the network can also be found in our show's notes. So won't you please join us again next month, as Steve and I will be reviewing Bruce's role in 2018's action thriller, Acts of Violence, to see if he dropped a deuce or if he dropped a Bruce. Until then.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
This has been a Man with an Exceptional Beard production.